come to order, and we will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, Gina.
Britt? Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Here.
Councilmember Bond?
Here.
Councilmember Todd?
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari?
Here.
Councilmember Steckler?
Here.
Okay, first up is audience communication. Do we have anybody signed up, Gina?
No.
Okay, does anybody want to talk to the council tonight? Going once, twice? Okay, we'll move on. Presentations. County Council Chair Terry Ryan is here to present us with a check. Yeah.
I like it when you come visit.
You guys keep raising the bar. Thank you very much for having me here again tonight. I will tell you, it's really nice to come home. And I love my job up at the county. It's a complicated job, but I really enjoy it. However, I have fond memories of Mill Creek. I still live here. My wife and I have lived here, raised our family here. We've been here for about 27 years, and we have no intention of moving. So what I'd like to do is turn this around and thank you for your public service. I know I've sat in those chairs for 17 years. I know what it's like. I think overall the community is very happy with the performance of the council, and I just ask you to keep doing the good work that you've been doing. Tonight, so I'm officially bringing the check for $100,000 for Exploration Park. We had this ready back in December, but you put the project on hold. And as I understand, the bids are all worked out, and you're proceeding forward. So this is $100,000 for that. I did, and this is just to get it done. In addition to that, the last time I was down here, I mentioned that I was trying to put $150,000 in the county budget, and that did pass through. So we have another $150,000, and that's for the play equipment, the new play equipment in Heron Park. And kudos to your interim city manager, Bob Stowe. I called him. I think I was in Nashville when I called. I don't know. I was at a national conference, and I said, hey, you know, is there anything we could do to help? And I happened to notice that a lot of play equipment is dilapidated in Heron Park, and he said they were working on it. I said, can you get a dollar amount that would get something that you could really be proud of and whatnot? And he came back with $150,000, which is usually about $50,000 more than I can normally do, but we were able to work it out. So thanks to Bob being proactive and your staff for getting those numbers together. I'll be bringing a check as soon as we can have one produced. And then the way this works is you just get the work done, you pay the bill, send us an invoice. We'll send you an ILA first, and then you just send us an invoice, and we'll send you the money. It's very easy, and we really enjoy partnering with our cities. So anyway, with that, I want to give you this check, and do you have any questions? Or I'm assuming there's no concerns.
Sorry. But seriously, no questions, but thank you so much for continuing to look out for the city as you do. And every time we have something come up, you're there with that big check or something that looks a lot like it, and it really goes a long way toward what we do here and getting stuff done in this city, not just talking about it. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, this is Mill Creek directly, and I don't know what the total is, but I've told you this story before, but we have different residents out here. When I was sitting in the mayor's chair, the county always viewed Mill Creek as the little brother who did too well. So they didn't put infrastructure in around us, and we can all point to 164th and 35th and all that. And so when I got up there, I just said, I'm going to make a difference. I'm not up here to push paper. I want to get things done. So I brought our public works director in, and I talked to him about 35th. Can we widen it now to five lanes? No, it's too late. The houses are built too close to the road and whatnot. And I mentioned this to you before, but again, we have different people here. So I wanted to make a difference. So I said, what else can we do in the area? How can we get cars off of 35th? So one thing we can do, and we're doing now, is widening 35th to a full three lanes. So you have a center turn lane, so there won't be any backups and choke points as people are trying to take a left across traffic. And we're two years into that project. Right now, when we're moving 35th from Seattle Hill Road down to 180th, That'll be done in about a year and a half. As soon as that's done, then we're going to take 180th from, 35th Avenue from 180th all the way down to State Route 524, also known as Maltby Road. South of the high school, we think we'd get four lanes in there, but that's going to get done. It's already fully funded. In parallel with that, we're going to open up 43rd, which doesn't exist right now, and that'll go. So east of 35th, it'll be 43rd Avenue, which doesn't exist now. We're going to punch it through and bring it up to Sunset Road, tie that into 132nd. That'll divert about 30 to 35% of the traffic off of 35th Avenue, so we'll have a nice equilibrium there, even with the new high school, so people can get to school on time and get to work on time or go have fun on time. And so that combined with what we're going to do on 180th and 180th from the Bob Thurber Highway to 35th, and also Granis Road and 196. You put all that together, Seattle Hill Road, that's $91 million. That's approximately $81 million more than the county has ever invested in roads in that corridor. And that's what you get when you have people that want to partner with the cities. Now, even though most of that's outside the city, it affects our residents. So, and there's more surprises to come. That's what we're, and you're probably wondering, well, what about 164th? Well, that's a $200 million project. So there's 200 million obstacles. But I'm intent on getting that at least programmed before I leave the council. It's a 10-year project, and I know what the starting point is, and we're already working on that. And that's $200 million widening to seven lanes from the Bob Thurber Highway all the way up to 36th Avenue in Linwood. And we'll get it done, and I'll probably make my successor look really smart. But the key thing is, can we get it done so we get cars moving again? And then there's other things that can be done, but it's even more money to really solve the problem east-west long-term. And I know, because we hired traffic consultants and engineers, it would cost $1.4 billion. And that's just not going to happen. So what we're going to have to do is just do this as we can afford to. Anyway, that's just an update. And, again, thank you very much for your public service. Really appreciate it. And I want to know, could we get a photo?
Hope so.
Is that right?
Politicians and cameras.
Who's got the baby?
Cameras, guys.
Oh, sure. All right, I'll do that.
Then is this up? I'm sorry, I'm high challenged. Is this up?
No. You're fine. You're fine.
Bigger checks.
Okay.
All right. Is it? Can we lower this a little?
Yes.
Right there.
That will work, yeah. Okay. Okay. Ooh, that took a while. Okay. And here we go on the other one. Perfect. I think between us we got them.
Thanks, Jerry.
Nice little.
I've already told you about three times.
Nicely done, John.
Yes.
Nicely done.
Amazing.
Back next week, or you want, and bring another chair. It's okay. We'll make room for you.
Soon.
Okay.
Soon. But the money is there. Thank you.
Okay, next up is the Arts and Beautification Board Appointments, Council
Member Jack. Why don't you go ahead?
John is the liaison to the board, but I got the opportunity to participate in the interviews this afternoon. We had six people come through, and as usual, we get six people who are passionate about helping out Mill Creek. It's just great to be appointed. Vacancies, two peoples who are on the board now whose terms have expired, so they're up for renewal. One standing vacancy we needed to fill. And so after we talked to those folks, we also had, Paula Dickman was also from the Art and Beautification Board. She was the board member that helped us out in our interviews. So after some deliberation, we decided to renew the term the new terms to the attorney general, and then Miles. And that left us one open seat, and we've selected Ken.
Lowry and Benjamin Bryles to 3-year terms on the Art and Beautification Board expiring October 31st, 2021.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any discussion or comments? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passed unanimously. Congratulations to the three. Now we're up to item D.
For the council, Benjamin's in the audience.
Yes.
Congratulations, Benjamin.
Congratulations.
Okay, next up is 2019 council liaison appointments. We do this about every year. We've a list is included in your packet. I assume no. Did anybody want to make any changes for the appointments? Everybody's happy. There were a couple of new ones that the Southport.
Yes, and so it's really more of an interview group rather than a committee. As I understand it, there are a couple of days this week that they'd like to have participation from Mill Creek's one of the cities in a phone interview with a consultant later on this week. And then in total, there's probably 5 or 6 phone calls that I understand will be held. And so at this point, that's the extent of the council involvement. I don't think it'll be a lot of time for a representative from Mill Creek, but that's based on the information that I have now. And in your folders was more of a scope of work that the consultant has prepared for that process of evaluating the Southwest UGA.
Open to multiple people? Are they trying to interview lots of folks, or they just want one voice to Mill
Creek? I think they're trying to get just one person from each area or agency. And the dates that they have available still are Wednesday, January 9th between 10 and 3, and then Thursday, January 10th between 10 and 12. They haven't set any future telephone dates, but those are the ones that are coming up.
Expertise. You probably know more about this than I do. I just said if nobody else wants to do it, I'm interested in this. I'd be happy to help. But if we need one guy, I think Brian might know better.
I will be there. I will be there for my day job, so I'm not sure I'm comfortable wearing two hats at that meeting. So I would welcome having company in the room.
Anybody else interested? If nobody else is interested, I'd be happy to do it. And I'll wear just the Mill Creek hat.
I'll bring my Mill Creek hat in case.
If you're wrong, I will harm this.
There you go.
So the Left One Board, that's an action that's coming up next. Once you adopt the ordinance creating the Left One Board, state law requires that the mayor appoint 2 members. So in this instance, although it's the mayor's selection, I would imagine that she is interested in learning if you're interested in serving on that board before she makes the appointment.
Mark? Thank you, Mayor. So I had 2 big boards, the Health District and the Joint Fire Board, and both of them ended up, because of our partnership with Bothell, I'm not on the Health District Board, and then we redid things with the Joint Fire Board. So I have room and would enjoy the chance to serve on the Left Board if you'd be willing to consider me. Thank you.
The meetings haven't been set yet. I anticipate it's not going to be a significant time commitment by any of the board members. Some cities meet monthly, some meet quarterly or as needed. So it's just based on the needs of the jurisdiction. In this case, we only have 1 Left member, which was causing the need for the board, so anticipate it not to be a significant time commitment.
So, Mayor, if there's a need and nobody else wants it, I'll step up and
second. If it fills the void.
So I like that you're willing to, and I'd be willing to step aside for you, but I don't think, given our similar backgrounds in law enforcement and this being a law enforcement heavy board, I just don't think both of us. So if, I would be happy to step out of the way for you, but I just don't think we should both be on it, unless there is no interest from anybody else.
My only goal was just to fill a vacancy, fill a void, get it done.
I know your heart's right. I just wouldn't want the appearance of any sort of stacking the deck or something.
No, I certainly appreciate that.
You guys are looking at me, so I know more about this than I should. Snohomish County Cities Group has a responsibility for electing the city representative to the county board. And for all of our existence as Mill Creek, until we got to 20,000, we were part of the county board. In the process of researching how we appointed that person last year, I discovered we'd crossed 20,000, so I helped lobby to change that limit from 20,000 to 30,000. I got really involved to try to figure out how to change that rule so we wouldn't have, we, Mill Creek, wouldn't have to constitute a board. So I know a lot about, not my favorite thing to do, but I do know quite a bit about it. I'd be happy to do it
I'd be happy to step aside if you'd be willing to do it.
And if such, maybe we take an alternate, Vince Stein on this alternate, if you don't, just in case.
This is something, so we're getting ahead to our next topic. This is something there will be. Active or retired police officers that have to be on it, and two council members that have to be on it, mayor or council members that have to be on it, and then a fifth person who picked at large. And we'll set up terms that are two-year terms, but that are staggered, and so there'll be opportunities to do this more in the future. Until we get this going, I don't really know what we're doing, to be honest. I mean, I think we're going to rely a lot on the county board to tell us what they do. It's approving the bills for one person, and it's unfortunate we have to set up this board, but we've got to do it because that's the way state law. We didn't get state law changed.
And maybe we should get some background from the public. Well,
we're going to be discussing the left board coming up with this board. It was just on the list, so we have some ideas. Bob, you had mentioned to me that the firefighters were interested in some sort of a board meeting. I know Mark and I did that before.
Yes. Some of you may remember the original agreement with the city and the fire district included the provision for a joint fire board. Two representatives from the council, two representatives from the fire district, city manager, and the fire chief. And that was largely because that original agreement relied upon the fire district adopting a budget on an annual basis that then affected the city's costs that it was providing for under the agreement. Our current agreement eliminated the provision for the joint fire board because, mainly, there is no budget that impacts the cost that the city will pay. It's simply laid out over the next 6 years. Nonetheless, the fire district commissioners see value, as well as I do, in having the elected officials at least meet on a regular basis, could be monthly, could be quarterly, just to discuss issues that are important to both parties, outside of the agreement, but simply have a forum for you to meet. And so they're interested. They've submitted a request that the city would reauthorize or at least appoint a couple council members to meet periodically with the fire district commissioners.
I'm interested in, if the only thing is, like I said, if you look at this list, there's my name is not on there. So my schedule, although my schedule's terrible for a lot of these because I have a 12-hour workday on Thursday and a lot of the meetings are on Thursdays, which just are not doable for me. Fridays are difficult. So I'm open, and if Councilmember Cavallari really wants this and he's looking to maybe horse trade one of his other things, I'm not against it, but I enjoyed serving on the fire board very much, and I do agree with their commissioner's opinion that there's no harm in keeping us in the loop as to what's going on. We put a lot of money of the city taxpayer money into the fire district, and it's good to be aware of where that money's going. Yeah, well, I would love to participate as well, but I'll let you all figure it out. Is there a limit on how many?
The joint prior board, when it was memorialized, it was two members. So it would, the only limit would be no more than three members.
So at three. It says no more than three. There's no, we're not voting. You're just going and exchanging ideas and gathering information. I would recommend all three of us do it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of value to any of them, all of us would provide some good input. So,
yeah.
Okay. Dan, you want to hold on to the Arts and Beautification Board?
I'd like to.
One more that's not on the list, and this came up in our Planning Commission interviews last fall, is we have representatives from the Council on the Park and Recreation Board and on the Arts and Beautification Board, but not on the Planning Commission. I suspect our city attorney would tell us that it's probably due to the fact that before we switched to a hearing examiner process, the Planning Commission actually sat in a quasi-judicial process in terms of reviewing development applications and making recommendations to the council, which made the final decision. We switched that, I don't know, 7, 8, 10 years ago. Sometime in the last decade that has switched, but we've never added to the list of councils, commissions, and boards that we have a representative on to add the Planning Commission. So
we've never had a Planning Commission rep.
I think because we were quasi-judicial.
Yeah.
We signed off on final plats after they went through the design review.
Well, not final plats, the preliminary plats. The Planning Commission heard the and took the public testimony and had the open record hearing and made a recommendation to the council, which made a final decision. We're no longer in that role. So if the city attorney agrees it's appropriate and doesn't present a conflict with law, I would suggest that we consider adding to this list the Planning Commission.
Thank you for the review of the background. I don't have a problem with it in particular. It was an issue under the appearance of fairness doctrine because of the quasi-judicial nature of the activities handled by the Planning Commission in addition to their planning legislative type of activities. Now, I understand that the quasi-judicial part is gone, which is why we've got the hearing examiner. And the legislative activities don't generally give rise to conflict issues, but they can. But nonetheless, that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be a representative or a liaison from the council to the Planning Commission, because there's lots of overlapping issues. And in my experience with a whole variety of cities, it's a good thing to have some offline interaction between the Planning Commission members and the council, so that they have a sense of what's happening and why it's happening, and we can address any particular potential conflict issues if they ever come up without having to prevent the whole thing from happening.
And as if I recall, I think Councilmember Steckler was in the interviews with me. I think Mr. Eisner actually raised this and requested and asked and thought it would be a good suggestion to have council representation. So I suggest we add to the list, and I would throw my name in the hat if no one else is interested. Should have a backup, though. What does anyone know offhand what days of the week the meeting? I know it's once a month when they meet. Do you know which day of the week? But I'm happy to be the primary person if someone wanted to be a backup, an alternate.
And it's just a liaison position. You're
correct.
Not
it's not
actually,
a voting member.
Yeah, not a voting member, and you're not sitting on the dais, I don't believe. But
correct.
Yeah, okay.
On the Planning Commission? Not if Brian's willing to put it.
No, as an alternate.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, then. Yes.
Folks in Gina Horlosa's group staff both of those. I think they do a great job of staffing them. But that's one more commission or board that doesn't have a liaison. So I don't know if you raised that question too.
But the design review, the decisions they make ultimately don't come to us, do they? Unlike the Planning Commission, which is usually reviewing changes to development regulations and stuff that comes before us.
They're not advisory to us. Yeah, art and beautification of parks are advisory to us. Planning Commission is coming to us.
Right.
DRB, Gina, the DRB makes recommendations back to whom or anybody?
To staff.
To staff. Okay. So I guess we don't need a lazy one. I'll see a need for one.
A question. Quick, on the Snohomish Health Board?
That is, we share one seat with Buffalo and Breyer, and they will be sitting for one more year. Then it's Breyer's seat for 2 years, and then it's ours for 2 years. So we're for ours for 2 years, not with our representative.
That's why we don't need anybody. Okay. Good. Okay.
Oh, it's always the new person. Does anybody want to drive to Bellevue at 3:30 in the afternoon for prior 8 meetings?
My excuse was that it conflicts with two. It's important that we go there. We fixed the bylaw. When I was on it, when I was a new guy, we fixed the bylaws. They had a hard time getting a quorum. A lot of those meetings didn't have a quorum. We got it. We changed the bylaws when they reconstituted themselves a few years ago so that if there's no one assigned from a city, then they don't count against the quorum. So we should either explicitly not assign someone, make it vacant, but don't put a name in there and have him not show up. But Jared's name still being on their roster and not even have him show up will screw up their quorum.
Just related to that, and not to make an overly obvious comment, but just for purposes of the record, on the roll call, Councilmember Meade resigned effective December 31st. So just for the record to reflect that.
Probably then, therefore, could be taken off of this because he probably doesn't qualify anymore, but we got to be careful. Just in operations, that group.
Okay, so we'll leave it blank until.
I nominate Mike Todd.
Well, yeah.
Sir, you
I would miss two out of the six.
Once you determine who the new council member will be, you can certainly make a wire appointment at that time, too.
Staff, Judy, you've got somebody going on the staff side, don't you?
When we have that.
Yeah.
So, no.
So this is one everybody hates, everybody loves to hate, because it's driving down to Mercer Island or Bellevue on a Thursday afternoon. But for the small amount of money we put into Riot 8, we get some value in terms of potential grants back towards fish barrier removal, stream bank improvement. We've gotten money in the past for North Creek here. So it's for a few dollars, there's benefit in being involved in Riot 8. If you don't show up, then never get anything. It involves staff showing up and involves council showing up.
I don't know the WIRA 8's schedule for the next few months, but certainly council could choose a temporary assignment until you have a full seven council members on board to determine if you want to reassign that at a later time.
I don't want to interrupt the WIRA 8 discussion, but I did quickly check the code, and the DRB does report to the City Council, not to the Planning Commission, just so you know. But it's reporting essentially on legislative matters related to design. So I don't think it creates it doesn't create any more of a problem than it does to have a liaison on the Planning Commission.
Kind of hold out a little bit, like we were talking about, and just when we get someone on board, worry about it then. And if they don't want it, and if the new person says no, that just will not work, and it's possible, then we'll revisit it.
Got enough of the meetings I drive to.
Yes, you do. So do we need to appoint somebody to the design review board?
Okay, anything else, Bob? Did you make an appointment for SCIT? Snohomish County Committee for Improved Transportation.
So the comment, so SCIT, I think we just now decided to join. It looks like Gina is going to be the staff representative. SCIT is Snohomish County Committee for Improved Transportation. It's got both electeds and non-electeds from cities. It has private sector folks. It is a group that gets together and talks about transportation. I've been going on behalf of Snohomish County cities overall, not Mill Creek. But now that we're a member, I would be pleased to go and also represent Mill Creek or listen for Mill Creek.
Out of curiosity, what's the difference between that and, like, let's say, the Transportation Review Board or Improvement Board?
One's a state board, and the other is a regional board for Snohomish County. There's one difference. One has a lot of money to give out, the other not so much.
It begs for money. Transportation Improvement Board takes a certain part of the gas tax, $100 million for the gas tax, gets distributed to cities and towns throughout the state. And that assignment is made by the Secretary of Transportation for the state, and so I'm on that as one of the three representatives for cities throughout the state.
I was kind of shocked to see a transportation board without your name on it, to be honest.
Yeah, there you go.
So what time do they meet?
Tuesday mornings, 7:30 to 9, and I can't remember which Tuesday it is. Second Tuesday, I believe?
Yeah, or the fourth. I see it's every Tuesday, once a month. So that's this one down at the bottom, Snohomish County Community for Improved Transportation, every Tuesday, or every once.
It must be third Tuesday.
So are you? Do you want to? So Mark, would you want to be an alternate tonight, or?
Yeah. Okay, I could do that. If it's Tuesday mornings, I could be an alternate. I was just trying to. Obviously, you clearly know the time. It didn't say it, so I just didn't want to find out that it was Tuesday evenings. But mornings will work. I keep my Tuesdays open.
That work? Yeah.
Yes.
Now on to the left board.
Right. So we've had a lot of discussion, a fair amount of discussion already about the purpose of the left board, but just to repeat some of what we've heard this evening or what you know. Cities, when they reach a population of 20,000, are required by state law to form their own LEFT board. Prior to the city reaching that 20,000 population, the city and the county had an informal arrangement where they would serve as the city's LEFT board. The city attempted to, via interlocal agreement, to memorialize that same structure with the county after we reached a population of 20,000, and also tried to do the same with another neighboring city. Both have declined to serve as the city's left board, which then left us with the only situation, which is to create our own left board. And I say the only solution is to create our own left board is because we only have one left member for which this board is required. So the board's purpose is largely to consider and approve reimbursement requests for left one members related to medical and dental treatment. There's other provisions of the law that's detailed the responsibilities of the board, but that's primarily the roles and responsibilities of left boards across the state. You'll see in the agenda summary that it requires five members, two of which will be appointed by the mayor, as we discussed this evening. Two will be elected by the left member, the one left member that we have. I say elected because typically that's what would happen if you had multiple left members. They would actually elect members. But in this case, whoever they elect is going to be serving on the board. And then a following member that's appointed by those four members, a community at large person. So that's the action for council this evening is to form the left board. And then we'll move forward with the creation of the members in accordance with state law. And I'd be glad to address questions that council might have at this time.
So is
one potential gotcha in this, and we've allowed for one person to participate by phone because our one left one member, it's Chief Clyde, Pastor Chief Clyde, who lives across the country. So he's going to participate by phone. That's great. But under 408050 compensation, it says we would reimburse for travel.
Yes. That is true. There's also an inherent conflict if someone were to elect themselves to one member out of the five-member board. In this case, the left one member intends to do that, but also intends to recuse himself from any actions involving him, which in this case would be almost all of them once you adopt the bylaws and elect the chair, thereby really allowing only four members to serve as the governing body for the under the left system. But you're right, the issue of reimbursement is not an issue, or travel reimbursements when someone is traveling from Mill Creek. It's probably simply just mileage reimbursement. And we did anticipate that that might be the case by allowing for a telephonic participation in the meetings. I've heard, I don't know if maybe the HR can confirm, but I've heard from our one left member that there is another city, I believe it's Mukilteo, that has one or a limited number of left members, and that one person also participates in the board. But there are jurisdictions that hit that 20,000 population threshold that have one or very few members. Nothing's prohibiting, but again, we tried to do it with Snohomish Town, and we tried to do it with another neighboring city, and they all declined to do it. Some have declined to do it because they believe that the Interlocal Agreement Act does not provide a pathway for that to occur. We happen to disagree with that, but nonetheless, the board gets to make that decision. And so rather than continuing to knock on the door of other agencies, having done it twice now, we felt we had no other route other than to create our own board. But that was our first attempt. It was to try to, let's just use some other board that's already in existence and via interlocal agreement and have them serve as our board, but we weren't able to do that.
Maybe not just hand it off to Mukilteo, but perhaps partner with them and create a joint board somehow with them. I think probably make a lot of sense.
Because we're trying to change the state law, and it didn't
right.
fly.
There's also, right.
So for Mill Creek, it's too late for us now, potentially. The proposal last year was to grandfather anybody who already had a board, was over 20,000, let them keep their board. But new cities moved them up to 30,000, and that didn't pass. Lowe and Arlington are headed for the same problem the next couple of years. Mukilteo and Montlake Terrace have already passed it, so they don't really care. Well, Montlake Terrace doesn't care to go backwards. Mukilteo is the same boat as we are, but they're stuck. This whole thing got brought up by Battleground, passed a couple of years ago and didn't have a board. Bainbridge also got away for many years without a board. They didn't realize what they were doing. So antenna is now up in the left community about you got to do it by the state law. So until we get the state law fixed, we're kind of stuck.
And we have been working for many months trying to create those partnerships with other jurisdictions. And we're at a point now where time is of the essence in that we have our one left one member having reimbursement claims that are waiting to be approved and no way to approve them.
Is there any way to check this on the travel?
I defer to our city attorney's advice.
Thank you. I'm afraid there's not much. It's the state law that says that board members shall be uncompensated except they shall receive their travel expenses of participating on the board. And I realized what the potential was with Mr. Clyde residing on the East Coast, and that could be a very expensive proposition, as Councilmember Todd has already pointed out. I also believe that it's a serious conflict of interest, and it makes little sense, if any at all, for someone to elect themselves to be a member of a board for which they're never going to be able to take any action. And I'm not sure what the motivation for doing that is. If the council wants me to explore that, I'm happy to do that with Mr. Clyde, but it's in your hands, really.
How about a city policy if we were to put something in place with limits?
That might work. I'm just concerned about whether or not the city can trump the state statute. And I have not looked at the specific question of whether we could have our own policy that while the state requires us to reimburse for expenses, we can define what those expenses would be. And I can certainly look into that and advise you later about that.
Right, because, I mean, there are, like, existing rules that we have with our per diem. If you travel past 50 miles or to the next airport.
Right.
I think that's under 4.08040, it's talking about meetings and board rules. It says one
person. Yeah, I think we could say two. I think it's important to have a quorum physically present, but I don't know that it's legally required. The reason I put one in the ordinance was on the expectation that Mr. Clyde wants to make himself a member of the board, and I was trying to provide a more cost-effective means for him to participate in whatever limited fashion it's going to be without lots of expense. But we can certainly make that two board members.
So Mr. Clyde is the guy who gets to decide, because he gets to select or elect these people. And if he chooses two people that are here in Mill Creek, no problem. But if he chooses two of his buddies in Florida.
Right.
So the RCW says two active or retired Mill Creek police law enforcement officers.
Right.
So they have to have retired and moved to Florida for him to pick them. So that's probably a small pool.
Well, they also have to retire in accordance with the state retirement system, so it's just not leaving the city's employ.
Right. Right. And I don't
know. It's the pool.
So it's not Mark Bond, because Mark is not retired.
I don't know Mark's retirement status.
Not retired.
No, I don't believe so.
And I didn't retire from Mill Creek, although it would be the left two system is what I will be retiring out of.
It's my understanding that Mr. Clyde was the only left one officer ever at Mill Creek. I don't think we ever had another one.
No, we did.
He was from active or retired left two.
Yeah, any left member, active or retired from Mill Creek officers. So active Mill Creek officers or officers who retired from Mill Creek and maybe living elsewhere.
Based on conversation I've had with our one left one member, he intends to elect a current police officer as well as himself. Now, all of this would go away if he were to elect two current officers, either active or former, that actually lived in Mill Creek, and then travel expenses would be moot at that point.
I think our exposure is a little more limited if we look at it that way.
I'll make the motion to approve.
Second.
Oh, totally you can. We can amend the motion to approve to change the provision in section 408, what is it, 150 or 050? 040, from one person to two people.
Move that we amend section 4.08.040 to say that, provided that two members may be allowed to attend by phone or electronic connection upon prior notice, rather than one.
Move second to the amendment.
Second.
Mr. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? And now we're back to the main motion to approve ordinance number 2019-844. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously.
Thank you, Mayor. For the left members that are appointed by the mayor, I would anticipate we would hold a meeting by the end of the month, and the agenda will be to approve the bylaws for the board, to select the chair, and then to vote on a community member, the fifth community member, followed then by a next meeting or the following meeting within a short period of time, I hope, to approve the reimbursement request that our left member has submitted. You know, the law simply allows you to make those appointments, and to the extent you have enough information now from the council, you can just make that appointment via email or letter to me, and then we will move forward. Thank you.
Is this, excuse me, is the city attorney going to look into that reimbursement language? It's interesting. It's in 4126.110, and it says they shall be reimbursed by their respective county or city for all expenses incidental to such service as to the amount as authorized by law. So what is that? I'm hoping you could look into that as authorized by law.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. And can report back either by email or letter before the next meeting.
Okay, so now we're up to item F, adoption of personnel policies.
Thank you, Mayor. So council discussed the proposed policies during the December 4th and December 11th meetings last year. Council also during the December 11th meeting wanted more time to review and digest the policies that have been presented, as well as you asked for a few clarifying issues to be resolved within the policies. And those have been done now and shown by red line strikeout language. There's also an updated manual been provided to you just for reference so you can see how the policies are going to be implemented. And so I'm here to seek your approval in adopting the council personnel policies, and be glad to address any questions that council would have at this time.
Sorry, and I tried to connect with the city manager this afternoon. So, easy one first. 6.9, paid family leave is the new Washington State Family and Medical Leave Program. Council policy. And it also appears in Section 5.8 of the procedure manual.
No, I think that's correct. Are you referring to the last reference in Section 6.9, the benefits become effective January 1st, 2020?
They become effective 2020, but the payroll deduction started in January 2019.
Oh, yeah, that's correct. Okay. Yeah. Yes, I would agree.
So 1 year, they're collecting for a year. This tax has been imposed on everybody.
Correct.
It's not an income tax, but it's a tax on all your income. Somebody can take that up if they want to. The only thing I think this documents what our current practice is, but in looking at this carefully, our current practice, I suspect, doesn't match with our previously approved policy. And I'm specifically referring to 7.4.3 vision premiums. The council policy in place was that those who are part-time employees would be selling as dental, so I should have been covering by not using 100% of the population of the medical service.
Well, we have one person who would apply to. Oh, I'm sorry. So That's very loud. I'm sorry. So in our AFSCME contract, we specifically have vision premiums being covered at 100%, even if a person is part-time. So vision premiums in this case for this policy would only apply to non-represented employees, of which we have one who is part-time and benefits eligible, and she's retiring next week. So this, I suppose, would be an opportune time to change that language from our current practice, since we won't have a current practice after next week.
The intention was back in 2012 is when we implemented the employee contribution towards medical. And so it was explicit that premiums for regular part-time employees would be at the rate, it would be at a rate of 0.75 after the 10% employee contribution. And so it should have been the city contributing 90% times 0.75 for 0.75 to 0.75. So the measure that the 10% so it's good that vision, maybe we have a chance to fix it. I bet we don't have a chance to fix it on the medical premiums. So maybe we're just accepting this.
I have information for you this evening to tell you when that change occurred after the adoption of the 2012 policy, other than to tell you it's been in existence for a while.
Dialogue about this, and I'm looking at the incentives and premium compensation change.
Right.
So we had in place previous policy based upon longevity, years in service, and their performance evaluation.
Well, the authorized policy from council was a pay-for-performance system. The city hasn't operated with that type of a system for a number of years. And so what our current policies are doing is simply, or at least what we're proposing, is reflecting what's been in place for a number of years. That doesn't mean that performance evaluations are not conducted. They are conducted, and we made that or tried to make that explicitly clear by creating a new section, section 8.1, in the policies as well as in the manuals themselves.
Correctly, though, so our policy was to have a pay for performance, and we just haven't been doing it. So what we're proposing is, as long as their performance is satisfactory, their incentive and compensation increases will be approved, correct?
Right. I mean, cities either have a sort of a step system, which is largely what Mill Creek has. You continue to perform at an expected level. You then receive a predetermined amount of money based on that evaluation. Some cities, and Mill Creek was one of those, have a variable pay system. Not all of it was merit-based. Even when I was here, the variable pay system that we had was if you performed at an expected level, you were going to receive your 2.5%. The variable amount was something that you could receive based on your performance, maybe additional 1% or 2% or 3%. The city at that time, and some cities may still have, bonuses that they provide or team awards that they may provide. And so that's really kind of the two spectrums, cities that try to mirror more of the private sector compensation models, which is a pay-for-performance or a total variable pay system, to what you see mostly in a municipal market as a step system.
The dialogue that we had was the proposal was the proposed change was to go to the step and grade system.
Right, or to mirror what has already been in place. That's correct.
We had a merit based system approved. We just weren't doing it.
Somewhere along the line, someone did not implement that system. That is true.
But I thought in the discussion, I thought the feeling was that we wanted to implement the merit based system, provided it didn't conflict with any representation union allocation on any case in any shape. But maybe I'm wrong. It just seems like we're going from merit based pay to step and grade. Is that what we agreed to? Is that what we wanted to do?
Well, what I took from that meeting was that staff would collect information, which we're still planning to do, and present that to you, because changing a system as dramatically as what that would entail, going from a step system to a variable pay system, is something we need to spend a lot more time with in terms of evaluating and then preparing our employees for that change. And it wasn't something that we were able to do either in December or in a January adoption process.
Actually implement what council had stated was what they wanted, but prior to me, the previous.
I didn't hear that direction that council wanted to do that. There were certainly some individuals who wanted to learn more about it or may have been interested in more of a paper performance. I mean, there's a lot of literature out there about both systems, how they both work in the private and the public sector markets. And so it's just more information, and you need more time, I think, to kind of fully evaluate that. And certainly staff does in terms of preparing that for you.
So if you think I should change my comments. My comments are, I prefer a merit-based system and do not want to support a step-and-grade system as it's outlined here. Just go to that. It's going to be hard to go back to a merit-based.
We're going to do that. We already have it.
That's just my opinion.
I know the policy doesn't state that.
We're not doing what we said we wanted. The policy was to be
somewhere along the way, the administration of that procedure changed, whether informally or not. It still changed.
If we're not doing it, to me, is not the reason not to do it.
Understand.
Clarify. So 2008, it was a core tenet that we wanted to have a merit-based system. 2013, it got switched to a step and grade system. Not all of us were happy. This policy manual codifies what we're doing, so this is not a change. But I'm the one who raised the question, said I'd like us to go back and think about what we did back in 2008. Again, not for represent employees, just for the administrative staff that are underneath this. And so I think that was where we asked staff for some more information on performance evaluation systems, performance management systems, how you might tie that to pay. So for that one, I don't see this as this. I think we're just codifying what we're doing right now. Thanks.
Yeah, you're correct, Mike, and thanks for bringing up the dates, because I couldn't come up with them. But it was it wasn't just a change that occurred in the vacuum. In theory, I 100% like a merit-based concept where harder-working employees receive greater recognition, and so hopefully that motivates the lower performers to maybe rise to another level. And I'll save it for my comments on that specifically for why I think it fails to meet the goal in a city instead of Amazon or Microsoft or another environment where it would actually work very well for when and if we have that discussion. But I feel my position is that this is actually what we're doing, what we've been doing, and what we're proposing to continue doing
is in fact better because it, in practical application, it is more fair. Although in principle, if we could create a perfect environment, I would greatly embrace what you're saying, but we've tried it and it really doesn't work, and it doesn't achieve the goals you would think it would because of this, the uniqueness of being a city, a municipality. We could go on and on about why, but if we have that discussion, I'll share why, but that's just my opinion. It doesn't work here as good as it as I would like it to.
I think by us adopting this policy, we are going to codify what I think apparently was an error that has been going on since 2012 in the way we charged employees for the premiums, part-time employees since 2012 have not been charged what we thought they were going to be charged. If this chart that shows up under 7.4, we could fix the vision one because it's a null set in a couple of weeks. We could fix that.
We would have one person that this would apply to. Mm-hmm.
That's right. She just answered. I was going to ask essentially, is it really all of that if we're just talking about one employee? That's where I was going.
Do you want to vote tonight, or do you want more information,
or what do you want? Well, of the group. Okay. But do we want to do this tonight, or do we want to talk about more information? Elsie, what more information are we, to be exact, when we're talking about premiums? I mean, they're constantly evolving, so I'm not really sure what we're talking about.
So how do we just look at the table under 7.4.1, medical premiums. If somebody is a 0.9 FTE right now, it's 90% paid by the city, the same as 100 as a 1.0 FTE. That number should have been 0.81, 81%, not 90%. Next line, 0.8, it should have been 72%, not 80%. Third line, at 75 or less, which is really 70.75 down to half, it should have been 67.5, not 75.
Bob, what's involved in fixing that?
Well, if the council makes that legislative directive, staff would change the policy. Not that it's ever popular to reduce someone's benefits, but that's the situation we would be in. But you have the ability to do so. It's a legislative directive, and we would carry it out.
Could it be adopted so that it would apply prospectively to future part-time employees but not to any current part-time employees?
I suppose you could effectively grandfather that in, and you think for a moment the sort of the policy rationale for doing that, other than just making it a pardon?
How many people are we talking about?
I think that just one individual at the moment.
Yeah, we'd also have to think about what happens if a person becomes part-time and then returns to full-time and then goes back to part-time. Just to think about. Yeah.
You have to grandfather say any employee hired after January 10th, 2019.
And you could do that. The only inequity you have that eventually at some point in time, I'm not saying this would be something that would be that visible, but typically when you do those kinds of policy changes, you may have those employees working side by side receiving different benefits and different pay, which is why you don't always try to refrain from making something effective a date in the future.
I suppose that is part of the rationale for why we somehow made vision premiums 100% paid by the city for the non-represented employees, because that made them sitting next to a represented employees under the contract got 100% coverage. So
that would make sense to me, although if I don't know if that was the rationale, but I suspect so.
So if we're going to have further discussion, what I would like from staff is sort of an estimate of a hypothetical year where two or three people go part-time then back. I mean, I think I'm fine with this because I think there's a benefit to us having the flexibility of having a part-time employee. They're collecting less wages. They're providing us a service. The ability for them to see while working here is beneficial. So vision might, you know, a pair of glass. I don't know what we're talking about here. I mean, if it's $1,000, I think it's probably a good investment in our employee, and they just get a little extra, but they're accommodating us with a schedule that most people probably wouldn't want. So I just don't know if it's a pretty small number, if we're talking of, you know, $20,000-$30,000 a year or something, in which case I think maybe we should look at that.
I don't think it's going to be that. The difference between 80% and 72% or 75% and 67% on a part-time salary basis is going to be much smaller. It's thousands versus.
Then I'd be in favor of leaving it as it is, and that part-time employee gets a slightly better benefit. And thank you for their service.
What we need is a resolution, if we're going to move forward, resolution, motion to approve resolution 2019-577, adopting the workplace personnel policy.
So moved.
Second.
I'm sorry I've been such a stickler about this, but this has been a long time coming, so got to the first step.
Have we finally compiled and updated the personnel? Picture that council was looking for, and I encourage council and the city manager to review and evaluate our policies to ensure we have fair, competitive, and financially prudent compensation and benefit package. Flavor of employees getting fairly compensated, but we've got to be careful what we've done here. I'm particularly pleased to see that the new Section 8.1 was added, so thank you to staff for doing that explicitly. Staff's commitment to helping educate us about best practices in this area. I think we owe it to our employees to be clear about our expectations for their performance and provide them the environment to help them be the best they can be and get good value for every taxpayer dollar. Finally, I accept that the policy we're approving tonight codifies the step and grade system of pay that was instituted back in 2013, but I still firmly believe that a properly managed pay-for-performance merit-based system is where we need to be for administrative, non-represented employees. That was a core tenet of our policy back in 2008, and the migration to the current system is not a benefit for our very best employees. That kind of step and grade system is widely used in the private, or excuse me, that kind of pay-for-performance system is widely used in the private sector and at other governmental agencies. And if we properly set it up and manage it, it can provide motivation for talented rising stars that get impatient under this pure step system. I think we need to attract the best and brightest to government service, so I encourage us to be creative and progressive in learning about and considering a merit-based pay system. And I look forward to staff's report that they promised to have it give to us later on this year and some training on performance management system so we can make a good decision. Thanks. I will be supporting the motion.
Okay. Anybody else? So we have a motion and a second to pass resolution 2019-577. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Next up is community funding discussion.
Commissioner, I'm going to sit down for a minute and then let Communications and Marketing Director talk to you about the community events that we have planned for 2019 as part of our study session.
Oh, that's right.
Council, I'm assuming you want to remain at the dais? Okay.
Do you want me to sit down?
So good evening, Council. We're very delighted to come to you with our annual events plan and discuss it with you and get some feedback from you about what we are proposing for this coming year. There's not a lot that has changed, but there are some suggested changes from staff, and we highly encourage your discussion on this with any questions you might have. So first, I just want to remind you that one of our key goals is to help our community be engaged, to have that civic participation, and that includes in our events. It's not just coming to council meetings or being involved in boards. It's also being engaged in the day-to-day things that the city does provide for our community. So I'm going to walk through our list of events that we've had in 2018 and discuss our recommendations for this year. And at any point along the way, if you want to ask questions, we can do that, or we can save them till the end, whatever works for you. So first, our first regular event of every year is our Teen Flashlight Egg Hunt, and this typically happens prior to the Easter holiday, and this has been an event held for teenagers. Mostly middle schoolers come to this event, some high schoolers do, and it happens in the gym at Heatherwood High School. This event in the recent years has had a decline in participation, and we suspect partially because it coincides sometimes with the spring break holiday. But also, teens are just different and interested in things that change over time. And that's what we're experiencing here, is a lack of involvement by teens. We have more people from the volunteer side and from the staff side than generally we have participating in the event. So it is our recommendation for 2019, not to continue this event. The next step is Extravaganza. This happens the day prior to the Easter holiday. And this is one of our largest community events. We have four different egg hunts that occur on the field at Jackson High School, Heatherwood High School, or Middle School. And it is very, very popular. We have a great deal of community support for this as well, with different organizations doing everything from face painting and STEM activities. We have a balloon artist that comes in. The food bank is there collecting canned food items. It's just a very, very large event and very popular, and people continue to come for this, and we're seeing it grow and finding ways to expand our participation this year. So we recommend continuing that. The next step is the Memorial Day and Veterans Day events, and we've grouped these because they are very similar in nature. Memorial Day is to commemorate those in the armed services who have fallen. So it is more of a somber holiday, and we have taken great care in the last couple of years to make sure that our ceremony is reflective of that tone, to be very careful in the parade and how we're doing that, to recognize and honor the people that have lost their lives in service. Veterans Day is more of a celebration of all of our veterans, and we have a very similar event between the 2 days. So we have a ceremony at the monument, Veterans Monument, in the morning, followed by a parade later in the morning. The makeup of the parades are very similar, and we've noticed in the last year in particular that attendance has started to wane because they are very similar. So one of the last things I will talk about tonight is our proposal for how to shake that up a little bit further, because we don't necessarily want to eliminate a parade, but we want to make sure we're providing our community with an opportunity to be engaged differently. So for Memorial Day, we are proposing carrying on with the commemorative ceremony to honor those veterans that have indeed lost their lives in service, and the appropriate place for that is at the Veterans Monument.
Right.
Yes.
I agree with your characterization of the events, but hasn't the attendance at the Memorial Day Parade been better with better weather than it has been in November? Aren't we seeing it tail off in November?
You are, and I think part of that is due to the fact, and we've heard this firsthand from people, due to the fact that it is redundant, but also weather plays a factor in it. But if you're looking to honor veterans and have it be that community celebration that we desire to do with our events, it is truly the best event to have that community celebration specifically for veterans on Veterans Day.
Oh, I agree. Just the thought that occurred to me is we're trying to get the community out. We've had better success on Memorial Day than Veterans Day, and so
yes.
Concern that eliminating the popular one may not necessarily increase the attendance at the Veterans Memorial, Veterans Parade, so.
I think the problem, at least to my way of thinking, the people I talked to was the Veterans Day, is they weren't, because we moved it to a day, a different day.
Did we?
Is that they didn't know. And we may think that because we know, everybody knows. But a lot of people are like, oh, I missed it? I didn't, why was it this day? That's not Veterans Day.
This is the only year that that has happened, and solely because a lot of people have religious observances on Sunday. So next year it's on a Monday, and we plan to keep it on the same day. I don't anticipate that the crowd will change significantly just because we have it on Veterans Day or on a weekend. In fact, sometimes the weekend helps because people who work can participate in the event. But, Brian, to address your concern about our community engagement, the last event we'll talk about, I think, will be of interest to you when we get there.
Joni, I just want to throw in there on the parade as well. I think with the, as a councilman, as a citizen, as a veteran, I love participating. I love watching it. I think we've built a fan base over the years. I think we were, the comments I heard is we are the biggest parade north of Auburn, Washington. That includes Seattle and everything in between. So I think it'll just keep getting bigger. I'd hate to talk about, you know, giving it away or perhaps not doing it. Sends a bad message. I like doing more things, getting out there and doing more. I just think that what we've built and what we're trying to build, our brand here in the city and our representation of veterans and how we communicate it to youngsters and young people through the parade, it's one of the tools. I like it. I agree with Councilmember Hostel. I think it's, the crowds have been great. I'd hate to see it go away.
Participating in competitions like at Disneyland every year, which is a frustration as we're trying to make it a community event. But indeed, we are trying to grow and will continue to do so, the Veterans Day events, to continue having that biggest and best north of Auburn, which is very, very popular in itself. Continuing on, the farmers market, this last year was our inaugural year. Based on community feedback and discussion we had with you in, sometime in the fall, we are proposing changing the date to Tuesdays and starting after school has wrapped up for the year and ending the week the fair, the Evergreen State Fair kicks off, to be respectful of our vendors that are trying to get additional business at that fair, which is very significant for them. We would hold it here in the City Hall North parking lot again. This does impact four council meeting nights, and we would reserve parking for you on those nights. But beyond that, we have worked with businesses. We're trying to get parking lots clear after 5 to allow the community to come in and park, which would enhance the opportunity for more people to come in and take advantage of the farmers market. In addition, most of our staff will be gone after 5, which opens up even more parking in our own lot over here. So that is our proposal, and we are interested in your thoughts on Tuesday evening.
Lock out parking to this lot. I mean, it's not just us getting to the meeting. It's making sure the public can get in here. So are we just going to block off the parking lot to this building and say no parking for the farmers market?
We didn't envision that, because if we do, as you look here, that would be more lots blocked off, more parking spots than we have people in this room at this moment. So we can hold some, but I think we need to carefully consider how we do that, and we're open to ideas.
I really like the idea of switching this and starting later. The early complaints were there's no produce. We can't get produce.
Right.
I like that idea. I like it for the council here. I think it's really important for the council to have a chance for them to be supported at the park when it ended at 5 and have it be more early to get here. So I like that idea. And it turns out produce is available, then we can address this in 2020. So I think this is a good response to the problems that we have.
Thank you.
Obviously, the optimum time would be Friday from 3 to 7. And I'm sure you checked on that, and I'm going to assume that your representative, Sarah, probably said we can't get the vendors into produce. Is that correct?
Correct, because a number of our vendors, as you would probably expect, have farmers markets on Saturday, not just here in Snohomish County, but around the state. We actually have farmers that travel over the mountains to come to our farmers market. Friday is really hard for them, and part of the reason we couldn't extend the hours on Friday this last year was because they needed to wrap up to get home to pick the fresh produce that they're bringing to the market on Saturday. So Tuesday is ideal because they don't typically have early Wednesday morning markets, and that gives them a little bit more time to be prepared for ours and stay to linger if they desire. Friday was not going to work in that regard.
You know, when I think back on the market, a limited commodity that we got, right? And yet it's kind of the tail wagging the dog on when we do the event. It's based on the produce. It's based upon when the produce is available. It's based upon when the people are not doing other farmers markets. And yet there were all these other merchants that were there that the attendance wasn't there because it dribbled off and they weren't getting the people that they need. I think there's no. I'd like to see if there was any way we could pursue doing a farmer's market on a date that would work for our city. And I would ask that your group talk to the Pike Place Market. The reason I met with them, and they are launching local farmer's markets in cities.
Okay.
Right now they're doing them in Seattle, U District, other areas, but they're open to going to outlying cities. What they have is a different situation. They've got a lot more produce and limited space down there. So for them to have an additional space for their merchants is actually a benefit because they can do produce in two locations or three locations or four locations and get more product sold. So I would ask that we kind of expand, and just before we commit, let's take a look at some other options, and it wouldn't be working, obviously, unfortunately, with Sarah, because you'd be working directly with the Pike Place Market. They would provide the service of providing you all of your merchants, including the vendors, the artisans, the produce, any other products that you want. So it's a little bit different situation than what we've done, but I'd ask that we look into it and see, you know, what could we do? We know what would be great for our citizens. Farmers Market, Friday night out here would be phenomenal. Is there any way we can make that happen? So I would just ask that you, I'll give you the name and phone number, but talk to the person who's in charge of the Pike Place Market as doing a regional, it would be called the Pike Place Market at Mill Creek. But it would be a farmer's market in Mill Creek. I would ask that we do that and see if there's any other suggestions or any other ways that we could make, even if we had to go away from the produce, I sometimes wonder if we could challenge ourselves and say, look, what if we just had the artisans out there on a Friday night? Would our citizens like that? Would they, you know, they're not going to get the fresh produce, but they're going to get everything else that comes to the farmer's market.
Right.
And those vendors are available to multiple.
So I will be following up with you tomorrow because we need to move quickly to nail down our market logistics if we want to have a season ahead of us.
And maybe somehow, I know that you were let down by the number of vendors who didn't show up. What do you think?
So our market manager is responsible for all of our vendor relationships. She required payment in advance. If they didn't show up, they didn't get paid. There's not much we can do about it. It's one of those situations when they don't show up, they haven't shown up, and they lose their space. It also erodes trust. And so I think it impairs an ongoing vendor relationship, not just with our market, but with other markets that this manager is responsible for. That's something we can look at, having a stiffer penalty, but I'm not sure how we would.
No, I just know that talking to Sarah down there is that people just keep showing up or not showing up, or they get missed, and that's not fair.
No, and part of it's driven by the crowds, by the availability of produce. There's a number of factors that she cited, and one of them does happen to be the day of the week on which we were holding them. The market. So I'll be curious about this other option, which sounds like it might have more oomph to get all the vendors in place. We'll check it out.
Maybe there's something else even beyond that. Maybe there's another alternative besides, you know, Tuesday nights, or it's kind of a rough night to really get too excited about a farmer's market in our city.
And I'm going to gently push back because the staff that are involved with this market also have the art walks on Thursdays, another option for events on Thursdays, board meetings on Thursdays. Wednesdays we have the summer evening concerts. So we're, and we also have to deal with other markets in the area that are competing with ours on any given day. So I'm curious about what options you would consider as workable days for the city as well. So that'd be very helpful for us. Correct. I think that will be helpful for us. The next thing on here is one of those events that interferes with the Thursday opportunity, which is Party in the Parks. This last year, we did it on Tuesdays on the off week from council meetings. Due to our proposal for the farmers market, we were considering doing it on a Thursday evening, the fourth Thursdays of the month, also to avoid conflicts with the art walk, which are on the second Thursdays of the month. This event was very popular for its inaugural year. We had really great attendance at the two we were able to do. The third one was canceled due to air quality when I was on vacation. But we had very great local community participation in these, and a lot of vendors want to come and be engaging and working with the people, not just having booths, but actually doing activities with them. So we are excited to offer this again in 2019. From the Lions. That's good. That's good for them. The next event is the 3-on-3 basketball tournament that we have been doing at City Hall during the Mill Creek Festival. We attract over 60 teams to this event. It is managed by Starfest 3-on-3. They are based out of Monroe, and they come in and handle the logistics for us, and we provide volunteers, and it works very well. And basketball continues to be something very popular in this area, so we recommend continuing with this tournament. Trunk or Treat is another one of our perennial large events. It happens here at City Hall on the night of Halloween. It is piggybacked on Treats on Main Street, so that is an event put on by the Mill Creek Town Center Business Association, which has historically started at 4:30 and they go till 6:30, and then we start at 6:30 and go till 8:30. We are working with the Business Association to try to meld the events a little bit better. So having them start a little later and us starting a little earlier, since this recommendation was provided to the council, we actually heard back from Canyon Creek Church, which would be helping us in our own parking lot. And they, the earliest they can get here is 6 p.m., so we're recommending just moving up the start time a little bit, but enough to help these events flow more seamlessly and provide not the lines that we are expecting or experiencing due to one event starting earlier and everyone lining up for the next one, just having a continuous flow. The final, I'm sorry. Yes. Till 8. Yes.
5 to 7.
Or 6 till 7:30. We're still trying to figure it out, but bring the times a little bit closer together than they were. Correct. This year, I was on budget, but last year I stood outside in the line to get in. Didn't stop the entire time of the event. It was way down Main Street, and it was just a constant flow into our parking lot, which is good. It's good that people want to come. Maybe not so great for the neighborhoods, but we love having a safe place for our community. Okay. Thank you for that. Yes, very much so. The next event on here is our tree lighting event that occurs the first Saturday in December. We love this event. It's a great community event. This year it was very popular, probably due to the weather cooperating for us. One challenge we have, though, is the tree that we decorate and light is getting too tall. So our public works vehicles cannot reach the top of it anymore to appoint the star and get all the lights to the top. We have been brainstorming ideas. One is to actually have the fire department come in with their truck, the ladder, and put it up for us. So we're looking at options. We still think an event on this particular Saturday would be great and tie in with what the Mill Creek Town Center is already doing. We just don't know 100% right now what that will be. And if you had any thoughts on it, we welcome those. It was huge, yes. So those are the events we have done to date. The final one is an event we are proposing. It's actually a week of events. We have worked with the business community to identify this as an option for the city. Calling it Mill Creek Days, it would take place earlier in May than the Memorial Day weekend, when people aren't necessarily booking out of town yet for the holiday or other weekends. It's also what's considered the tourism shoulder season, so we're not competing with other jurisdictions on the events that they tend to have more in the summer months between Memorial Day and Labor Day. It would start with a community fitness activity that we would put on from our recreation program. We aren't 100% sure what that would look like yet. We've talked about doing a run or doing a play on the word triathlon, calling it a try-a-thing-on, having a unique thing. It could be street hockey in our parking lot, a smaller run around the North Creek Trail. We're looking at ideas, but it would be physically oriented. That evening, the Mill Creek Town Center kicks off with their annual wine, art and wine walk. So that would continue. Throughout the week, the business community would have an opportunity to participate. As you know, we have a number, for example, of medical providers, and having maybe a day where people can come in and get health checkups or fitness activity ideas or something to help with health. Or there's the financial element. We have a number of financial institutions trying to help the business community partner with us on events and engage the community would be great. We would cap the week off with a parade. It turns out it's actually on Armed Forces Day, which allows us to still honor and celebrate our military without taking away from the somberness that comes on Memorial Day, which I'm sure John Raymer will be willing to weigh in later on his thoughts on that event in particular as our special events manager who is from the military. We think this is just a really good opportunity to engage with a number of organizations in our community, to have volunteers, to provide civic opportunities for folks, and that is why we are proposing this in lieu of our fuller Memorial Day activities. So with that, any other questions you have or thoughts on this last proposal, I would love.
What is the community fitness activity you're thinking about?
That's what we don't know yet. That was it could be a run, like Run with Heart, but for our own community. Maybe Steve Knox would consider moving the run of the mill. We don't know. Or it could be something we work out with another local fitness organization. We're open ideas on that.
Good job putting this all together. You know, anything that's probably redundant or maybe outdated, I think it's time to move forward with things like that. I'll defer to the experts on the farmers market. Tuesday, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I trust your judgment in that, and the mayor seems to like it. So the Mill Creek, the Memorial Day Parade. I know there are some that believe that all day Memorial Day your head should be bowed and flag should be at half mast and we should just be in this somber moment. I think you forget the kids in those moments. I remember when we eliminated like the throwing of candy and whatnot or handing it out to the kids. It takes away, we've turned it into a community event. While we do have pieces of it that are the reflection in the morning, pay your respects, then the parade in the later part of the morning or early afternoon. We've got a fan base. We've got people in the community that depend on it. Me for one. I just think going backwards from it now takes away from what we've been building toward of these community events. And at the very least, this year I would say leave it as is, and if you wanted to look at it and hear from the community. Let's do like we did with North Point and maybe have, during the festival, they can vote on the kiosks, whether they like it or not, whether they want to see it or not, and at least get community input from it. I think that should always be the driving factor. So I would support looking at it maybe next year, but the elimination this year is, I don't think, is appropriate. And your Mill Creek days, yeah, I would support it. I don't know what days to do it, but, yeah, it's worth talking about.
Thank you. Yeah, I going back to the two parades, Memorial Day and Veterans Day, two parades with... It was well attended because the weather was good, but I think it's also a struggle for people who want to use that three-day weekend for something else. And so I think what you guys are proposing is potentially having a parade in May, but calling it part of Mill Creek Days. I came into this having read this earlier. I like this idea of the Mill Creek Days ending it with a day of caring kind of event. I've been a big proponent. You and United Way did Day of Caring for a long time, and they've kind of gotten away from that. Gold Creek has kind of taken that on. I think it'd be great if this is a chance for us to go out and serve our community. And so my only problem with the parade is if it keeps people from getting started on those projects they should do all day Saturday or all day Sunday. I'm not quite sure how that works out. And I would also encourage us, although Gold Creek Church has that Day of Hope or whatever they call it, and I sure want to encourage them to be carry most of the load. I think we need to make sure it doesn't become a religious tenor to the thing. So a secular approach, and so by having its City Mill Creek and the Gold Creek Church together. Leagues in somebody's yard or
on the, I noticed, I just throw it out, brainstorming, Hispanic Heritage Group. So Hispanic populations U.S.-wide are growing. My ex-wife was Nicaraguan. My three kids would fit in under this category. So I like it, personally. But when I've been in this community, we are about 18 or something ridiculously high percentage of Koreans. And we hear nothing about Asian events, or and they're quiet, and maybe they go out of the community. But in brainstorming recognition of the diversity in our community, I think they're very underrepresented and ignored. And they're a pretty big part of this community. So I just throw it out. If there was an opportunity came along to tap into that group and recognize their contribution to the community. They've been here from day one. I remember. And anyway, that's just a thought, that we have a very large Asian population, specifically Korean. And I have not heard anything ever to recognize their part in this wonderful little community.
I love that idea because it actually ties into what we're proposing. Because we know that, for example, the Hispanic Heritage Month parade that happened in September, we started getting questions, why are we having so many parades? This provides an opportunity for any cultural group, any community group, to come out and say, this is our parade, this is our community. We're going to show our colors right here. We're going to do our... trotting dancing horses down the street or whatever might float their boat. And this is a way to do that without having to take away from the recognition we were trying to do with Memorial Day and Veterans Day.
I had a couple of brainstorming questions too. And as with my Pike Place Market, these are all brainstorming ideas. So I know you've got a lot into this already and the year is here, but just for some feedback, and maybe it won't affect this year, maybe it would affect next year, but since there's actually a couple of things. I noticed we don't have anything on Black History Month, and we've had some feedback on that in the past, and
I really think it's kind of a miss for us as a community not to recognize that some way with some kind of an event or recognition for it. I think that's a little bit of a miss. Doesn't it be huge? Doesn't it be a parade? Because we got lots of parades. But then speaking also of the parades, it's interesting to hear these two comments on the Veterans Parade versus the Memorial Day Parade. You know, one's too somber, but the weather's good. The other one, more of a celebration, but the weather kind of is colder than heck. Why, and you probably have an answer to this, I'm sure we've talked about it, maybe there's too many 4th of July parades, so why don't we do one in the city of Mill Creek? Because it does give you a reason to celebrate, and the weather's usually pretty good, at least warm. This hasn't been a factor in history?
I think in my experience, if we were looking at the last couple of years, the fact that we have one on Memorial Day and one on Veterans Day, having another one on 4th of July,
oh, yeah.
First of all, it's too much for staff. But second of all, a little much parade fatigue going on. So we could do one or the other.
Have a celebration during the 4th of July, which would give you the celebration and the good weather. Just a thought. That's it.
I favor the Memorial Day parade, but then I'm older, my father served, so. But that said, if we're going to move forward with the Mill Creek Days, I want to make sure it's spread all over the city. It is not limited to the town center. We always focus on the town center, but we have vet merchants who are just as valuable all over the city, and especially like out at Thomas Lake right now, where they're being hurt by the 35th Avenue, which there's nothing we can do, but I would certainly hope that events were all over the city and that we were promoting all of our businesses, not just the town center.
Correct.
I'm going to dare to step out on a ledge here for a little bit. Listening to some of the comments up here, and I appreciate and respect everybody's opinions and their right to make them. So I'm going to make mine. Society as a whole, or at least in the city, been very appreciative of our military, of our diversity, despite what it says in the paper. Korean folks, African Americans, gay community, of course we love them. But you're going to, in order to somehow create some sort of notoriety or attention to those groups, you're going to eliminate the Memorial Day Parade for the veterans. It's take it or leave it, or one or the other. And I'm not only bothered by it, I'm offended by it a little bit. It's the constant trying to look to please or draw attention to a group that maybe has not had the fanfare that they would like in order to please. And I just don't know why we do that. I don't know why as a culture we do that, as a people we do that. My vote is to keep the Memorial Day Parade in. I think it's appropriate. It's something we put in place and started. I think it needs to move forward. And I would hope my fellow council agrees that it's the proper representation and respect for our military. Thank you.
Yes, we will research more. John and I will be in touch tomorrow, and we will bring this back very soon for some blessing on our events for this year. Thank you.
Result of a discussion we had during the budget. Bond wanted to give more money to the senior centers. We ended up not raising fees at Sports Park, which to some extent subsidizes Little League. We've got people coming to us now wanting rooms and free rent at the City Hall. None of these are bad. None of these are bad people. But we have to have some mechanism to decide what it is that we're going to do. Because we can go broke doing all of this. So, Bob?
So, the mayor's provided a little bit of a background as to how we got to this discussion point this evening. I provided some information for you in the packet. One was a document that was produced for the city of Bainbridge Island that describes several approaches that other cities have used when they allocate funding, particularly for social services or for neighborhood organizations. And I think that was very helpful given that Mill Creek doesn't have a history in providing those types of contributions to organizations. And all those organizations, most of them were in Keene County. It also included the city's existing facility use policy. And, of course, as the mayor had mentioned, what brought us here initially was the request for additional funding for the senior center, of which the council then allocated $2,500 from council contingency. So tonight is really just the introduction to these topics and trying to determine where you want to go with respect to all the various issues associated with either its senior center funding, which historically you have provided directly to them, or if council is interested in determining ways to fund other neighborhood organizations or fund social organizations through a grant process or other means, as well as who should utilize and have access to city facilities, and then the logistical issues associated with those groups utilizing the facility. So there's a lot on the plate, but we just wanted to hear your initial thoughts so that we can maybe focus a little further in future meetings about a particular policy issue that you want to create. You do, and in many jurisdictions over the last several years have gone to a coalition approach where applications are received regionally. Cities would allocate based on a per capita basis or a specific amount, and then that coalition then awards those funds. Obviously, that has an impact budget on your budget, but that's just one avenue to pursue, in addition to the direct allocations that you could make to organizations, such as what you've been doing with the Senior Center.
I think there's different policy issues that we have to discuss. I mean, to me, the issue with the parks that I raised is different from the issue that was brought up on funding of different social service organizations. The issue in the parks, to me, is a policy question of what are we trying to accomplish? Are we trying to recoup our costs? Are we going to subsidize some groups or another? And that's different from the issue that Councilmember Bond raised, which might be addressed. Do we have a policy where we say that we have groups bring to us during the budget cycle or once a year what the requests are, so we're not consistently on an ad hoc basis taking them into account? But I think they're different issues, so I'm not sure there's one policy that we should aim or think that we're going to come out of this with.
Well, definitely your collection for sports facilities or recreational facilities, I would probably put that into a different category than contributions to social services or to the senior center or even to the use maybe of city facilities, although it's somewhat related. But just in terms of how you approach it, the discussion, I'd probably maybe put that in the parking lot for the moment, and then we can come back to it at a future date.
This would be helpful for me going forward. The next bit of information is, historically, what are the groups that have asked for funding or that we provide funding for besides the seniors? What is the range of the number of groups and organizations that we've dealt with in the past, and what's the dollar figures that we've supported those? I think that'd be helpful to help frame the discussion to figure out the extent of the issue and the policy we may need.
And based on your experience, it would be helpful to also attempt to project what we think who we anticipate might come forward, because I know you've had requests for space
Yeah, there's been far more space requests than there have been social service requests, but I think that's largely because the social service agencies and organizations know which jurisdictions are providing contributions, and so they know Mill Creek has not historically have done that. So I don't know of any necessarily right off the top of my head of who have requested dollars from the city simply because you don't have that process set up now.
Could you go back and find out historically what we might have done in the past?
I don't think you've done anything for social service agencies because, again, you've never allocated any funding towards that. It's all been through direct allocation of funds. And, again, since my last turn here, the senior centers has been the only agency outside of the city that you have funded that I'm aware of.
Thanks for finding this report from Bainbridge. This is a gold.
It's a good report, yeah.
Some interns spent a lot of time really collecting a lot of information. Looked to see what other cities are doing, it was illustrative. What I didn't see in there was kind of their definition of what human and social services were. I saw things in there, people, you know, when they did say, here's some grants, it was things like senior centers, food banks, domestic violence programs, teen programs, and some housing kinds of things. Those first four, all ones we've seen in different fashions around here. Senior centers, of course, we've been doing that one. But food banks, you know, the food bank, Mill Creek Food Bank got started, but that group didn't come to the city. They went to Rotary and mulched a lot of free space over at the school and other places. Very creative, I think, because they said the city probably didn't.
Yeah.
Long time ago, there was a malt shop, and that was a few $1,000s. But I think Bob's right. There haven't been that many requests on our little city because we didn't have. Interesting to see what that definition of services is if we start comparing ourselves to some of these communities. But it was also interesting to see a lot of Snohomish County cities they checked on in 2015 had zero. You know, Mukilteo, Lake Stevens, Montlake Terrace, Linwood was just thinking about something. It's interesting that nobody around here was doing much.
That report was interesting. I mean, predominantly King County cities, and maybe because there are more need, more urbanization is occurring, leading to more funding requests. But I think Linwood was indicated as one of the cities that have created a contribution that they make now, but very few Snohomish County cities so far.
Thank you, Mayor. So at first blush, I agreed with the mayor's suggestion that we form a policy so that we don't get overrun. But the city manager just said when asked, how many people do we have? So we don't really have many because we don't have a policy, suggesting that if we did have a policy, we would then get overrun. Anybody else see the problem here?
That's all.
Yeah, I guess I'd say that because there's a lack of requests doesn't mean there's a lack of need. And I think you all recognize that, too. It's simply that other jurisdictions have been more highly publicized as providing funds and have a track record. You don't have that same track record, so it doesn't surprise me that you haven't received those requests.
But if the money's there, the request.
I suspect so. And again, it's usually the request comes from having participated in funding these agencies. The request comes from agencies that provide service regionally. And many times those regional services, they're covering people in Mill Creek. You're just not contributing towards it. I can confirm, yes, I can look at some of our records and see if we can do a little research to find out, have we funded anyone else similarly like we have the senior center? Yeah. I mean, what I do know is that you haven't consistently funded on a per capita basis or set forth money annually for social services. You've allowed residents to just contribute directly to the social service agency or organization of their choice.
Okay, so we'll see what we find.
Okay.
Anything else tonight on that? Okay, so now we are
up to the consent agenda. We have four items: approval of checks number 59549 through 59685 and ACH wire transfers in the amount of $1,772.45. Audit Committee Council Members Todd and Steckler. Payroll and benefit ACH payments in the amount of $461,611.48. City Council meeting minutes of September 11th, 2018, and City Council meeting minutes of
Second.
Second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. We're down to reports. We have a proclamation, and I didn't get it on the agenda, but we wanted to honor Dr. Martin Luther King. We will have a proclamation for Black History Month next month, but his birthday is the 21st. So it says, whereas Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. devoted his life to advancing equality, social justice, and opportunity for all, and challenged all Americans to participate in the never-ending work of building a more perfect union. And whereas Dr. King's teachings continue to guide and inspire us in addressing challenges in our communities, and whereas each of us can and must contribute to making our communities better with increased opportunity for all our citizens, now therefore I, Pam Pruitt, the mayor of the city of Mill Creek, on behalf of the City Council, do hereby proclaim January 21st, 2019
as Martin Luther King
Jr. Councilmember
Long? No reports.
Cavallari?
No reports.
Report tonight.
Mike?
I want to say thank you to staff. I saw it in the Monday Minute and reminded me that thank you, employees, for participating and getting over the dollars, saves the city some dollars for our health benefits, but I'm hopefully it also makes people healthier, and that's great. So I'm glad that staff did that. I wish we could be in the numerator and denominator, but since we're not employees, I guess we can't do that. But anyway, it's a good program. And I also want to say thanks. Tomorrow, I guess, is Law Enforcement Day, so we got to salute the chief and all the officers out there. We bring you guys donuts as you drive around the city. Is that what we do?
Indeed, please do bring them.
And I'm just going to stand out my cul-de-sac, and you guys drive by and get them.
Absolutely.
Thank you for all you guys do, and our council members, too, who are also part of law enforcement. That's a great thing. So thanks.
Can I put candy in the
room? Bob?
A couple items. I'll start first with an announcement and invitation. Municipal Research Service Center is promoting a webinar, of which the city has signed up for, and I want to invite council to this webinar, too, if your schedule allows for your attendance. The webinar is on ethical considerations for local government staff and officials. The webinar speaker will be Stephen DiGiulio, his attorney at Foster Pepperman. Stephen is a regular lecturer at AWC events, and some of you probably have heard them. The event's going to be on Wednesday, January 16th. We'll show it. If we have enough interest, we'll show it in this room amongst staff and council. But January 16th from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. So if you could let me know if you're able to attend, just want to get a count so that we have the appropriate room to show the webinar. Yes.
So we had a Stephen DiGiulio who lived in Mill Creek in Evergreen. Any chance?
Different person, yes. next is last week I sent a memorandum to council asking you your thoughts regarding establishing, if desired, a citizen panel for review of city manager candidates. You previously identified March 23rd as the date for council interviews. The day prior to that would be the date that those candidates would be interviewed by the staff, and then a citizen panel if you so appoint one. The question is, if you want to appoint one, if so, how does that city panel get appointed? The mayor had suggested to me prior to the meeting that one method of appointing a citizen panel is for each of you to identify or nominate or elect one citizen to that group that would serve on the panel. So If you have any thoughts, it'd be great if we could get that finalized and set up by the 22nd, your next meeting, so that we can make arrangements for that process to occur and make sure citizens, then those who are appointed, are able to actually serve on that day. It'll be a full day. It'll be the 22nd, which is a Friday of March.
Bob, would you refresh us on, you had staff committees of various sorts. Did you have other business connection folks already on your list, or would they be eligible for these nominations?
You mean the more the business representatives?
Other community partners as opposed to city employees or council is already on your list.
Right. So on the 23rd or the 22nd would be the executive leadership team have an interview panel. City staff would have a panel. So those are all internal organizational panels. We then would have a public or a staff lunch where all the staff have the opportunity to meet with the candidates, a community panel interview. And many of these would run concurrently, depending upon the number of candidates that we have identified for interview. Also planning on an open public meeting, sort of social hour or two, likely in the evening hours. The location hasn't been determined yet, where any member from the public or anyone from the outside could come in and meet the candidates and hear them and probably have maybe ask some questions, or also have some evaluation cards where we can get people's feedback on each of the candidates. So it's a pretty comprehensive and robust evaluation process.
Our citizen representative needs to be available all day on the 22nd.
All day on the 22nd, yeah. I don't have the times yet, but you could probably plan on pretty much from 8 to 5. They'd be tied up in interviews. Could be a little less. It's depending, again, the number of candidates interviewed. If you interviewed 6, it's going to be an all day. If you interviewed 3, it'd be 3/4 of a day.
It seemed like we would know people that.
Yeah, I've got a couple of ideas, but the trick is when you say all day, they're probably.
I mean, when I say all day, it could be each hour. Each interview is 1 hour, and if you have 5 interviews, there's 5 hours with maybe an hour sort of as a debrief. So it's likely going to be with 5 candidates at least 6 hours you need to plan on, or that person will need to plan on.
The challenge is going to be limits the field to a lot of people, but there are people.
So the suggestion is we give you a name or some names and
come to the meeting on the 22nd with your name, or some of you may identify the same person, so having an alternate or 2 or 3, and then see if you can arrive at a group of 6 individuals to serve on the panel, or any number of people that you want to serve on the panel. And the objective would be just get a broad spectrum of community interests to help you evaluate. They're not going to be ranking the candidates. You're going to be asking them to provide their strengths, what they see as their strengths and weaknesses for the hour that they're involved with them.
Action items that come back next meeting.
Okay. So we'll talk more about that on the 22nd then. If we have names in advance, you can send them to me too as well. And then finally, there are a number of reports in the packet. One was regarding the Veterans Service Center establishment, and staff is going to be attending a meeting, learning more about what that might mean, what the requirements might be for the city, and that's coming up on the 16th, and so we'll report back to council. Another is that – I'm sorry, I didn't hear that last part, Mayor. Sure. Certainly, we can.
In fact, we have a member here to the Veterans Board, Ron Vivian, I believe is his name. So we have people that are involved in our community already.
Okay.
Maybe they already came, but I thought there was a fairly active group in Linwood. I remember calling on behalf of one of my neighbors. Trying to do some of the stuff, and maybe an ad hoc. Maybe this is trying to get there.
Okay. Another is a potential meeting with the command staff at Everett Navy Station, and potential symbolic adoption of the ship. I think it's USS Ralph Johnson. And if council's interested in terms of the schedules to meet with the command staff and then potentially adopt that ship, let me know, and we can schedule that for you.
I don't care. We have to promise to swab the decks once a week.
I'm not sure if there's any decks that are required.
It's probably maybe as well as painting something, right?
I don't have to take a background check, do I?
Yeah.
You can't get on the base without a extended... Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you find out what's expected?
John, could you come up to the podium there then? Thank you.
Evening, folks. So adoption of a ship is basically a symbolic gesture between the city and the ship to have closer ties. It doesn't require swabbing the decks or anything like that. You don't have to do any painting, but they do expect to have, if we have a parade, we invite the ship and the captain to the parade. If we do any kind of dinners or any kind of events, we make a special point of inviting the crew to the Halloween treat. And we just extend extra invitations to the crew for better ties between the community and the military personnel on the vessel. Now, the commander of the vessel's name is Casey Mahone, Commander Casey Mahone. He's called the captain because he's the captain of the ship. He's got some time on his schedule next Thursday and Friday, and he has offered extended invitation to the entire council to come out, get a tour of the ship, talk about the actual program and how you do that. It's basically a letter saying that we wish to adopt the ship. The ship says we would like to be adopted by City Mill Creek. So symbolic thing, but it's very important for the military. And with all of the new people coming into Everett, especially with the ship just being stationed here, it's a great positive thing for the community and for military awareness. So if you're available the 17th and the 18th, either of those 2 days, there's a tour of a ship waiting for you. And as the kind of quasi-person in charge of it, I have an ID card. I can drive you on base. So I'll get you on base, no problem.
Last time I was on the base, everybody in the car had to have...
Nope, just the driver. Unless it's doing it's called FIPCON, Force Protection Con. If they're a FIPCON Bravo or Delta, Bravo through Delta, then it requires ID cards, a driver's license for you, but an ID card for the driver. And I'll drive you. So.
State of the station thing was closed unless you had the proper ID.
Yeah, that's the FIPCON, the Force Protection.
I didn't have an extended driver's license, and I go every year.
Yeah. You just need a picture ID and a military escort. Yeah, pretty simple stuff. Okay. Yep, sure. And one thing about the Veterans Support Center, the last meeting I had was on the 11th of December. It was between about 100 people in South Snohomish County area, a whole bunch of different veterans support organizations, Wounded Warriors, horseback riding, PTSD, stress, education benefits. They all got together in a summit to talk about how there is no single point of contact in the Snohomish County area for veterans to get services from. And so the idea was presented at that meeting to have a VSC somewhere in South Snohomish. And the next wrap-up meeting is next week, and I'll be attending that, where we're going to do the lessons learned from that summit. And at that summit, we're going to talk about where to start looking at siting that VSC. And I kind of need something from the council that says you wish to be considered. It's not saying, yes, we're going to do it. It's just you want your name on the list of places to be considered of where to site the VSC. And that doesn't require any money from the city council. It just says that there'll be grant programs and all these other people take care of it and do all that stuff. But personally, as a veteran, I think having a support center within a 30-mile radius of here, there's about 54,000 veterans. And it would be kind of good to have this be the point and the place. Just my opinion as a citizen. Well, I can talk about the parade because I was going to have a comment here. If you want me to do my public comment now, I can. Or I'll come back up in a minute. Yeah, your choice.
I'm going to call you.
Yeah, public comment in a minute.
I'll come back in a
minute. Can I comment about the location? As much as I hear what you're saying about they need a locus of operation, and it'd be kind of cool if it was Mill Creek, but I think from a regional standpoint, Linwood makes a lot of sense as being where light rail is going to be, and a lot of bus service, a lot of stuff. I think that that central location to public transit makes it probably at least one of the things you should put on your list. The group should put on their list.
It is on the list, and Linwood has already said that we'd like to be considered for it. I just think that Mill Creek might want to be on that list, too.
And then last was staff's report on Nextdoor, the platform, and that we are going to be moving forward as an organization, connecting with Nextdoor, at least at a trial period over the next 6 months, and we'll report the results when we're finished.
Yeah, I've got my two cents. I'm not a fan of Nextdoor. I'd be interested to know when you say in the report you want to use it as a tool. I'm not clear for what. You also indicate if we would allow only those people within Mill Creek city limits. I got an invitation a year and a half ago to join Nextdoor for my Brighton neighborhood, and I go, this is cool, a way to keep in touch. I think there must be three people in my development in the rest of South Everett and Silver Firs that are in the Brighton Nextdoor. So I'm not sure, maybe you don't know about it, I'm not sure how you control this. And then also, is it, how do you control the content once you let people in? I mean, I get the top post for Brighton. Turn cash, backboarding, secrets to meditation, last. And house cleaning recommendations needed.
But Martha Lake Airport is the neighborhood too. It's, I mean, they're not quite.
It's in South San Luis County. So, when you start using the tool, because I get these updates every day, and there ends up being 3,000 posts for Brighton. And if the city's going to have in their posts, it's going to get buried in there, so I question how much our citizens are even going to look at it. So,
I got the same dogs. I sent it for Spring Tree, and a very few Spring Tree things, an awful lot of Martha Lake Airport.
Yeah.
I see all the same dogs and cats. That is where I saw the young lady who came down and talked to us about wanting to have a crosswalk down there by the whatever, and it was over the holidays where people said there's a chuck hole on Mill Creek Road.
Yeah, I sent that to Bob, too.
And so there is some value in being involved in that, but I'm not sure that it sounds like the city can't see those things. The city can only put stuff out. So as an agency, maybe you can draw a better boundary around it so it doesn't end up being all still South Snohomish County. But I'm about at the point where I'm going to turn this off because I'm tired of people pitching stuff for me to buy. It's not neighbor to neighbor. It's becoming very commercial.
Yes.
My impression. But
I actually, because I asked for reconsideration, I think it's valuable. I spend 3 minutes. I scroll through all the crap, and occasionally there's stuff there. So it's just a question of being aware. For instance, I didn't know about that pothole on 164th because I avoid 164th.
Good morning.
And but I contacted Bob, and it got fixed the next day. But I wouldn't have known without that. So I'm not suggesting this is the end-all, be-all, or replacement for Facebook or whatever. I just think that there, a month earlier, there was about some videotaped fight in a Jackson High School restaurant. You know, I don't know, but I just think that as a way to be aware of what people are saying, I also like the idea of when we're doing events or what have you, because Fire District 7 posts there all the time. And it's just a way for Joni to control the message. And even if you just post saying, hey, we're having festival days, you know, that's something. I don't see this as a huge investment, but just a way to be aware.
Caution, it's efficacy. I agree. We need to use all the platforms. I'm just cautious and about how much we're going to get our message out on that. So.
I don't know. People seem to respond. They talk about school levies, and they're trying to be a little more specialized. They have something with individual schools now. I just think I like the idea of trying it for 6 months.
Well, I assume it's not going to, when you do a post to Facebook or Instagram, I assume those are done together and there's a way, no, they're separate, but you're cutting and pasting, so it's not going to be a lot of time and effort on your part.
So a couple things. First, this is not necessarily something we want to do, but we are exploring it so we can be fully diligent in our work and reporting back to the council as to the pros and cons of this platform. We came here about a year ago, maybe a little longer, and the research at that time said this is not the way to go, but we're hearing feedback that maybe we should reconsider, so we're doing that. When we do our messaging, we don't just copy and paste. We like to tailor it to the specific social media channel we're using. We have currently limited it to 3 channels. This would require additional management by staff of a social media channel, so we're going to explore it in terms of time that it takes, because posting, believe it or not, does take time. And then if people are responding, there is an impetus for us to respond to what they're saying or be aware of their comments. So we are going to use this 6-month trial period to understand exactly what Nextdoor is from our perspective, not from what Marysville tells us or Thurston County, but what we are doing ourselves.
Who controls who joins the group? Is there an administrator assigned that creates the group that is then responsible for every request saying yes or no?
Correct. So my understanding from the last time we did research is that you can ask to join a group, and the administrator can let you in if you can verify that you are part of whatever geographical location. However, also based on that research and feedback from different PIOs around the country, if you post something they don't agree with, they can remove you. So it's not necessarily the most unbiased platform to use.
So what would our – I mean, on the one hand, I'd want to say limit it to Mill Creek residents, but if we're trying to promote our festivals and events, we don't want to limit it. So
every – channel that we use for social media has a different purpose. So, for example, Twitter, I use primarily to connect with news channels. They are more likely than anyone to be scanning Twitter. Nextdoor would be used primarily, in my estimation, for trying to get messages directly to residents about things they need to know about in Mill Creek. I'm not trying to use Nextdoor to connect with someone in Everett about our events. It's specific to Mill Creek, so that might be a road closure. I could see a lot of police interactions specifically on Nextdoor if that's a channel we're going to use.
How do we control people from being a job posting board? Hey, I can build your deck, or I can put you – I mean, how do we control it? We can't control
that? All we can do as a city is be responsible for the content we're pushing out, and if somebody tags us, to respond to the content that they've posted. We don't necessarily have the ability to see what they are posting on Nextdoor. Our participation is very limited in terms of city's presence.
Oh, so the administrator can only determine who comes in, but once those people are in, for the most part, for
job
free game.
Job requirements are the least of the problems that show up. Job offers.
No, I'm just trying to understand how we're going to use it. I'm not disagreeing. I just.
Because we don't live in the particular neighborhood. And that's unfortunately something that people in my role across the country are experiencing, that they can be pusher-outers of content. But they're not. We don't live in Brighton. We don't live in other neighborhoods. So they are not going to let us in to see what your neighborhood is discussing. And that's part of supposedly the safety mechanism behind Nextdoor is you're in your contained community.
This is a nightmare for police, by the way. Because people think they've done their due diligence by posting ridiculousness on the internet with no accountability. They don't have to look a police officer in the eye. They don't have to sign a statement saying, I promise I'm telling the truth. And the story is always a little bit better if you embellish a little. I mean, some stuff's kind of boring. So, and there's no way to judge it. And then they say, this happened. I saw someone going through my neighborhood stealing packages, which clearly they should have called 911, but they don't. But then they'll say, I mean, then they'll do other things. I saw a suspicious person. He was a black male. And the cops didn't do anything. Well, no kidding, because that alone is not suspicious. Articulate something that anyone that would be suspicious. Individual was sitting in their car for X amount of time. It had a flashlight, went out walking, blah, 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 blah. Or what, black, white, Asian, female, whatever, we'd all agree was suspicious. These websites, in my opinion, I'm the city assault and deputy. I deal with this constantly, and it is a nightmare for me. I do not like it. It gives people a false sense of, believing that they did get the word out in the improper way. And the joke between 911 is I got some people that won't call 911 because it's not an emergency. Their arm's on fire. But they don't want to bother anybody. And then they got someone else calling saying, my mail's really late and I'm concerned about the mailman. or where should I go vote? So people need to call 911 and report this stuff. Even though it might think, well, whatever, it gets vetted, and it improves the likelihood of it actually being a legitimate thing, as opposed to just randomly firing silliness off of the internet because I'm bored on home and my 19 cats aren't keeping my attention like they did the day before. I've been there, I've done it, I'm telling you. Chief, tell them I'm wrong.
It's not limited, however, to next door. That is just sure.
True.
For the 19 cats.
True.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, whether we're involved in next door or not, it's not going to change how people behave on next door or what they post on next door. This is simply, we're just looking at it as a way, can we produce some content that is valuable for citizens? And can we maybe pick up some information that we wouldn't ordinarily pick up through our other channels that we have? And then we'll evaluate that. Exactly. That's it. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, so now we're down to audience communication.
John Raymer, 831 148th Street, Mill Creek. I just want to make a comment about the Memorial Day and Veterans Day parades, or the potential for having parade on Armed Forces Day. In Veterans Day, we had 63 participants in the parade. On Memorial Day, we had 43. And the feedback that I got from almost all of the people that I have asked to get extra people for Memorial Day is, I'm already booked. I'm already booked at another Memorial Day parade. There are a number of Memorial Day events going around on Memorial Day, and getting people to participate in our event is problematic because there are so many people and so many parades and so few people that can actually participate. So they have to pick and choose, and often they have not picked us. During Veterans Day, there are fewer events going on, so we got a lot more participation. If we did do a parade on Armed Forces Day, there's no competition with anybody for anything. We would have a much larger turnout in terms of people, in terms of people coming to it and participating and being in the parade and doing stuff. Now, from a veteran's viewpoint, from a guy who's worn a uniform for 25 years, I've lost friends in combat, so Memorial Day to me is a time to remember their efforts and my friendships with them. Armed Forces Day is a great day to celebrate everybody who's ever worn a uniform and done something fun. And to me, it's a great uplifting, a great fun, let's get the community out and do all sorts of great stuff. And I actually love Joni's idea about having a large, week-long event of stuff, and I think it could be a good community-building exercise. Just my two cents. But I'm happy to do parades anytime you want.
Carmen Fisher, 14623 Main Street, B101. Okay, so as somebody who just fell in love with this community through the community events, I have opinions. The first one, on the farmers market, on the Tuesdays on the parking issue, I think it's both, like, practically and symbolically important to make sure that people have, like, real, genuine access here. I think opening up the parking will be great. I would be a little bit more comfortable if at least the press, or maybe even anybody who might normally ask for a disability accommodation in that time period when they would ask, might be able to request a reserved parking space. I think that the whole Fourth Estate thing would be good. What else? Councilmember Steckler was talking about a couple of ways to get the market happening on Friday, like maybe not having produce. I do not think would work at all. I think that's important. It was an interesting idea to work with the Pike Place Market, but I also think that our community events here are just, like, so unique and so important that maybe maintaining our own brand could be something that we might want to value also. And then regarding the Memorial Day parade, I think that we need to be really careful talking about how similar it and the Veterans Day parade are. I think that it's actually, it's kind of a larger problem in society that we don't recognize the importance of those well. And never forget and thank you for your service are really different things. I'm not a veteran. My opinions on what is the most honoring is not that important. But that was a thought that I was having. And but I'm not out on Councilmember Cavallari's limb about, you know, why do we need to recognize the importance of some groups that haven't been recognized. I think that part of the reason why the Memorial Day Parade may be important is because, you know, we really have to, a lot of these things, it's, you know, it's not just what's on paper. It's about how people feel seen and valued as members of the community, which is why I think that Councilmember Bond's suggestion of making sure that we include some activities for Korean and Asian communities, really vital. When I help with the traffic for the parades, that's the place where I just really see, you know, how many people from these communities are showing up. And I think that, you know, I mean, this is one in five members of Mill Creek. We've got 20 people in this room, you know, like, we need to reach out. And also I appreciate, you know, talking about getting programming going for Black History Month. That's almost the, it's almost the opposite, right? It's important maybe because we have fewer members from that community is what makes it more important to bring that education to us. And the only other thing is that I personally am available all day on March 22nd. Thank you very much.
Once, twice, okay? With